Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion. And by Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 133 for January 12th, 2012. Katz's and Cars. Watch Autoline After Hours live at Autoline.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern or 2400 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline After Hours in the iTunes Store.
Thanks, folks, for joining us once again. I can't wait to get started on the show. Right, Peter? Peter DiLorenzo, folks.
Absolutely, John.
And for the show, too, we got Jim Hall from 2953 Analytics with us.
Howdy, John. Good auto show week here.
Good auto show. Wow, that's what we got to talk about. I don't even know where
to
start. There was, yeah, that's why we have you here. And you thought we were going to talk about, you know,
movies.
NCAP
ratings. NCAP rating. Oh, yes. Yeah, and not only that, specifically the Bosnian NCAP rating system, which is, you know, it's that whole thing about harmonizing NCAP, and the Bosnian NCAP is wrong. You know, you don't hit every car with a school bus. I'm sorry. That's not part of the requirement.
Okay, let's get him off that track and back onto the auto show. Quick. What do you think, Peter? What stands out in your mind?
Well, first of all, it was good to be at an auto show again, and instead of a environmental group hug or a political convention.
Or a wake. It's been that for the last 3 years.
Yeah,
pick one.
And it was a real auto show, and it felt like the auto business again. And, you know, I had my significant cars at the end of my column. The Fusion is the most significant car for any number of reasons, and it's going to blow up the segment. Jim.
Yeah, we've already talked about this.
Yeah, well, we got to talk about it here because I haven't heard this.
The Lexus LFLC was the most significant exotic concept that will never see the light of day, but
correct.
It's still influential.
Right. We got to talk more about that,
and
too.
And drop-dead gorgeous.
Yeah.
The NSX was the most significant car that's coming eventually.
Don't bet on it.
Yeah, but you know what?
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Ooh, okay, I want to hear more about those, too.
But the thing about that, we'll have to divert right now on that, because remember a few years ago, Detroit showed concept after concept because they didn't have their product cadence. They didn't have any production cars. So they'd show something and say, wait a minute, we're still alive, we're still hip, we're still cool. That's what the distinct impression I got from Honda when they showed the NSX. It was just like, oh no, don't count us out yet.
But they had a chief engineer that spun up more of a story about it. The corporate chief engineer spun more than just that kind of story around it. That's why I say fool me once.
Yeah.
You know, and the car was also a waterline model, too.
What do you mean, a waterline model?
It's basically a large foam model where there's no full interior.
Right,
and we call them waterline models. They can fill the interior
with water. So, I mean, they say 3 years from now, we'll see. And then my most significant concept for a whole raft of reasons and my best in show was the MKZ.
Lincoln MKZ. Yeah, we can get into that because there's a lot to talk about that. What stuck out in your mind?
Well,
when things just come when you think about
the show. The one that pops to mind, one, was how has Smart or Mercedes lost the way with that truck thing that they showed?
Oh,
I mean,
man,
good
I
Lord.
I just
the Smart for us.
I just blasted that. I'm starting to question Dieter's sanity now.
Exactly. The thing, there's no context for it. It's crazy. It would be like Mini bringing out a short wheelbase F-Series pickup and calling it, you know, the Mini Bedman or something. I don't know. The one that stands out is the car that a lot of people didn't expect there. The 700C.
That thing blew my mind. Now, so anybody who didn't see it, it's a minivan, but it's a sort of futuristic minivan. There was no press announcement about it at all. There was no press release about it.
It was an auto show at its best when we were all surprised because we didn't get the heads up on it.
No, I agree totally. I came around the corner and went, what the hell is this?
You know, I forgot to mention my column. I thought it was really pretty cool. It was the coolest thing Chrysler had there.
Yep, and it's a Chrysler show car that embodies that flamboyance that Chrysler show cars always used to have.
Mm-hmm. Well, in sort of revisionist modern.
No, but the thing is, it's that kind of flamboyant.
Yeah.
There are a couple of things I like about it. One, they're actually looking at a real issue, and that's that commoditized minivans are what they are now. Let's face it. Minivans are just a commodity.
People don't aspire to them.
They don't aspire.
They don't want them.
They don't want them.
They buy them because they have to.
The market's flat. So if you look at this as a flat market, and when Gen Y start getting to that child-rearing age, which is going to be later than it was for the Xers and later than it was for for the boomers, when they get there, they're going to have a lot of alternatives to a full-size or a large minivan. Mm-hmm. A large minivan. Think about what I said. But they're big. You know, the things are bigger than Tahoes. So if you want to have one and you want to sell it for something other than absolute bargain basement, it's a box you can buy at pricing, you have to do something to it to make it flamboyant, to give it presence. And they did that with that vehicle. But the inside package is still a minivan. It's just the wrapper's unlike what you'd expect for a minivan.
I heard that the Chrysler people didn't even know that that was going to be on the floor until 2 weeks before the show. That it was a total surprise to everyone. In fact, I thought it looked more like a Lancia design.
Well, that was the other thing I was going to say.
Yeah.
The other reason I like it is you look at it, because remember, Lancia and Chrysler are going to converge their design languages, and it's a brilliant idea because in no market will both cars be sold. In Europe, that thing is a giant people mover that's a high-end sort of pseudo-Pope mobile almost in a way. I mean, think about it. That could be a high-end Lancia executive vehicle. Mm-hmm. And what you could do to the interior with that much space is pretty amazing in a package that isn't quite as irritating or disgusting or badly proportioned as a Maybach. You know, and you wouldn't charge Maybach money for it. But the point is, this car is really, on a couple of levels, it's really intriguing.
And remember that the Dodge Caravan's going away, so it's not as if there's
only one brand is going to have a minivan.
And that's Chrysler.
And you got to make it premium. You have to do something so you make sure it does not go and start duking it out with basically Kia, the entry level, the other Japanese, the two Japanese vans that sell, because they're not entry level, but you can see they're more commodity vehicles every generation because the whole segment's getting commoditized. There's also, from a design standpoint, something really neat on the car when you see it. There's more tumble home for the front doors than there is for the rear doors.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
And the way they transition it, it's this little interesting fillet surface that it's odd looking, but it is incredibly interesting to look at. The surface development on it is spectacular. And, I mean, literally, of all the cars, it's the one that made me smile the most.
Well, I smiled because, to your point, I didn't know what was coming.
Yeah.
And can you imagine if we went to an auto show where we didn't know anything that was going to be there?
Wouldn't that be
the most fun of all?
That would be great.
Well, the last show that happened was when Cadillac showed the 16.
Mm-hmm.
But even they tipped it 2 days before at that theater.
Right.
You know, so this whole thing about showing them on the stand, that's what auto shows used to be about. You know, but
sure, that's when you're going to have all the photographers really shooting. That's
right.
When you're going to have people applauding.
You know, I've written about this extensively. Yep. These car companies just cannot help themselves. They have found, you know, just.
Well, but the truth is the media has also induced it. We got to have stuff early or you don't get covered.
Well, of course. But, you know,
if it's news, you'll cover it.
Yeah, it's real simple. If the car companies grew a set and said, no, we're not doing anything. We're not handing out any little sticks.
Come to the show.
Yeah, we're not having a preview. Everyone's going to see it at the same time.
Come to the show.
And you can choose to do with what you want to do with it.
And you know what? If the car's significant, ain't nobody going to ignore it.
Right.
That's right.
Okay, John, what'd you like?
Boy, there's so much to talk about, too. Yeah, I agree. Love the surprise of the 700C. I do agree. I thought that the Lincoln MKZ was probably the most significant, but by barely so.
It's not a concept, though. That's the car.
Take
the glass roof off. That's the car. And that's why
put on some door handles, too.
Yeah. I mean, but
it's so production, they shouldn't call it a concept.
And the car is amazing anyway. It really is. You know, it's the first, it'll be the first Ford product to have a push-button automatic transmission since the 1958 Lincoln and 1958 Mercurys. They probably won't be playing that up.
No, they are playing that up.
That is the first.
They're not mentioning those dates.
Yeah.
Because only you know that.
Well, they'll show the production car in New York.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, I loved the Lincoln display. I thought it was the best display at the show.
The Lincoln display looked like you could go in and buy something valuable for your significant other there, take it home, and they wouldn't go, oh, this came from an auto show. It had that look.
Yeah.
I mean, and those expanding. I want two of those for my yard,
yeah,
upside down, like trees.
So explain those. So anybody?
It's a
sculpture.
I know the name of it, and I can't remember, but it's a lattice work that compresses down to a circle, and when it expands through a series of hinges and links, it becomes spherical again.
Right.
And they had LEDs over it.
So it goes from like maybe 1 foot diameter up to like
7 or 8 feet. Yeah.
The juxtaposition between the Ford exhibit and the all-new Lincoln exhibit, boy, that was money well spent.
Exactly.
And you wander around in the darkness in the woods at the GM exhibit. It was just like, what is going on over here?
Yeah.
I mean, I thought the dark days were over. But, you know, Cadillac's dark.
Right.
Okay, great.
And it was cars on a carpet kind of approach
to displaying. Yeah, cars on a carpet.
Yeah, the thing with CAD in their defense was that, they, in my mind, they had some new cars there, but on the dark display, they had all these black and dark-colored cars. They should have used that to have cars that pop out of the background, and they didn't.
It was just a disaster, and I, you know, I mentioned this in On the Table. I mean, GM, just, they have got to do something radical because they're starting to be left in the
dust. I agree totally. In fact, I went to the Cadillac ATS intro, which they held at the old Design and Color Studios.
The Argonaut building.
The Argonaut building. Yep. We're in this very historic place. There's Harley Earl's office right down at the end. But how does it start out? The chairman gets up and starts talking about, sales in Europe and sales in China and shareholder value. And I'm looking around and nobody here is for that.
Shareholder value. I think that's the word that killed Jack Nasser, the phrase. Okay? You got to be careful with shareholder value.
Right.
You know, the German executives are the worst.
They're the worst.
I know.
They need to get away from that. If they want to talk about that, they should hand it out to the media and have the executives there for questions. But don't do it at the presentation. Show us the damn car, please.
Well, come on. In the case of BMW, it's not like they were showing an important car. It was only the 3 Series.
Yeah. Right. Well, and also...
Which kind of got lost in the shuffle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's a very significant car.
But part of the reason is it's been on their website for probably 2.5-3 months.
Well, they leaked photos weeks ago.
That's the whole thing that and they needed to do that from a cadence standpoint because in Europe, they're in sellout of the old car. So I understand the timing, but that means it's not really a launch except as a North American launch. But, you know, this is the problem with global launching. We're going to get ours after the Europeans get theirs.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing is how about when Mercedes puts that magnificent 52 300SL race car next to the new SL? Guess what looked better? Guess what looked more contemporary?
Stop.
Guess what?
You know, I'm sorry. Just because the new SL looks as though it was designed by a blind man, okay? Well, you know, I'm sorry, but Mercedes, from a design standpoint, is going the wrong way more often than the right way. Think about the first CLS, the gorgeous sedan.
Fantastic.
You know, for a number of years, it was the most beautiful Jaguar you could buy. I mean, it was. And lo and behold, they have the new one. Train wreck?
Yeah, well, the SL's got so many slats, creases, folds. It's
vents.
Too big.
Right. Mm-hmm.
As I put on the site, it looks like it's uncomfortable in its own skin.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and then you see that beautiful SL. Oh, it's just stunning.
And it was interesting that,
someone told me, well, that's not going to be in the showroom next. And I said, what? Yeah, you're missing the point.
Well, you know, maybe their point is they know it's ugly and the other ugly cars will make it look better in the showroom. I don't get it. Now, the funny thing is there's a new Mercedes. I think the ML is a very successful redo. I really do. I think the ML works.
Mm-hmm.
But the CLS doesn't. I dread to think what they're going to do to the S-Class. I really do. The S-Class, that segment is going to be a segment where it's going to where the car that's going to be the walk-away best-looking car is going to end up being the A8.
Could well be.
I love that.
I do too, but I'm just saying it's going to get better as the other guys bring their cars out. You know, how often does that happen?
And along with the 52 SLR, Honda had a 1982 Accord parked right next to its concept version of the next Accord coupe.
Did they have a concept version of the next Accord there?
Yes. You couldn't tell the difference, right?
Well, no, I saw the square light body kit for the current Accord coupe. That was interesting.
That 82 Accord came from the Henry Ford Museum.
Yeah, it did, because it was the first Honda down the line in Ohio. But I thought, that's how you make your concept car really look modern. You park a 30-year-old car next to it.
That's still, I mean, it's funny because I knew some friends that went over and looked at it instead of the concept. I'm like, I haven't seen one of those in a long time. And they're looking at it and saying, yeah, this thing in a lot of, and it's.
Yeah, just all kinds of zaniness in that regard. But you know what? I'm wondering, should we take our first break right now? Nah, we got plenty of time.
Good. Okay, let's talk about, that was interesting for all you insiders out there. Sal and Bingo brought Dan Ackerson over to meet me before the Chevy show.
Is that right?
Yeah, we had a nice chat. So, just so you know. I wanted to like the GM concepts, the twins. Well, not twins.
They're not twins.
But the their version of the 1 Series, and then the...
And the 1 Series was the code,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the red car.
No,
Or is that the true?
No, it was true. It was the white car.
Yeah, it was the code 130R, and it's the 130 and the 140. Period. End of discussion.
Yeah.
I used to say there's no such thing as a bad name for a good car. I'm reserving judgment on that. That may not be the case.
Well, I mean, I love design. You love design. You love design. I think GM's got tremendous talent. I don't think either one of those cars was emblematic of the talent they have. I thought the white car was interesting, but not interesting enough. And I thought the red car was interesting for about 10 seconds. And then the more I looked at it, the less it got.
The interesting thing about the red car is, though, right? Let's think about it. Honda could build the white car.
Front drive.
Hyundai could build the white car.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of companies that could build that. But there are only a couple of companies on Earth that could pull off that other car and make it actually work for what it's supposed to be. Design subjective. There's stuff I don't like in that car. But the point is, it's a car that connotes a car that there used to be a fair number of. I mean, it's a Datsun. You say a 1 Series. To me, it's a Datsun 510.
Right.
I thought 1 Series.
And it's not going to be the 2015 Camaro, in case you're wondering.
No, not at all. But, you know, for a car under a Camaro that maxes out with a turbocharged 2-liter 4, that would be a hell of a great way to have a more affordable car that's fun to drive.
But, you know, now that GM's letting the touchy-feely masses design their cars, then they can just shut down design. Right?
No.
After I sat through that presentation, well, I don't know if you read my thing, but it was just like they did this video thing, and they had all these young people. I want a car that doesn't ask me to do anything and does everything for me. I want this. It was just like halfway through it, it says, I want a gun.
Was this the Chevy presentation?
Yeah.
I missed that. So I missed
it. Just dreadful. Ugh, man. Oh, well.
It's funny because at that show, buried away on one stand was a car from 2060.
Which was what?
Oh, the little Roadster?
No.
Oh, the Mirai.
No.
What?
The Honda or the Toyota Fun VII.
I didn't see that.
Nobody did. AMOLED exterior skin. You can make it anything you want from the outside. You can basically have an RFID chip when you drive through the city. Advertising's on it. Cut your cost of ownership. The inside has no real windows. It's virtual imaging to see out of the car.
Yeah,
the point is that is a car. That's a machine, the likes of which is where probably the second half of this decade or this century is going to be like.
Yeah, except the problem with the Toyota exhibit is like wandering through a used car lot. I mean, they jammed through so many vehicles in there that at least you got to see the Lexus LF LLC on a little turntable, and there was some air around it. The rest of the Toyota exhibit was...
It's like a parking lot.
Plus, they had banners, like, about what their warranty or their... It was just
blocking your view.
What are they doing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. But this thing was up against the wall. Actually, where the auto line used that little thing, it was behind that.
Oh, really?
Where that thing was.
What are they hiding it for?
It was a black car with a black background. But it's one of those cars, you look at it, and it really is one of those things that says, this is a possible future mobility solution.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, it's Toyota that's looking at this stuff. General Motors has apparently an omnibus program about future mobility that is far bigger than a single car. I mean, it's pretty. It sounds like it's pretty big. Not all companies are working on this because some guys are so concerned we won't be able to survive the next 5 years. Well, they are going to survive the next 5 years.
Sure they are. You know. In fact, the guys in this town are going to make record profits.
Uh-huh. And so one of those companies is going to feed another company.
What?
Fiat's got to be happier than the Dickens going on.
Yeah, absolutely. Chrysler's bailing out Fiat. Like I said it would 2 years ago.
Sure, because, I mean, I understand the critical mass purchasing. That's what motivated all of it. But the truth is the profitability of cars in this market is so much better than Europe, and it has been probably, I'd say since the teens.
Yeah. Well, same with China. You know, the thing I keep pointing out is... General Motors sells more cars in Asia than it does in North America to the tune of, I can't remember the exact, like 40% more cars in Asia than North America, but makes 5 times the profit in North America than what it makes in Asia.
Remember, though, with everybody dealing in China, it's a joint venture.
You got to give half your profits away.
You're lucky if you get half. The way some of them are structured, you don't get half.
And when does the bell go off? and China. Ding, ding, ding. Thank you very much. We really enjoyed working with you. We are nationalizing everything. And if you have a foreign nameplate, there will be an 80% tariff on anything you sell in this country. Bye-bye now.
Could happen.
It could happen. I don't see it
happening.
The
only thing, not at this snapshot in time, but it could happen. And, you know, look, clearly China wants to dominate it. But the only thing that's holding them back is the Chinese people don't want to buy Chinese brand cars. Mm-hmm. They want to buy the names that everybody else in the world wants to buy.
Yep.
So I think it's going to be hard.
Yeah, Chen Yang is kind of tough. You know, to aspire to a Chen Yang. Well, I want a Chen Yang. Or a Coda. You know, maybe they'll call them Codas over there.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right, John, I think it's time for our first
Let's take our first commercial break. So another thing I saw at the show was the place was crawling with politicians and regulators. We had Ray LaHood, the Secretary of Transportation, Stephen Chu, Secretary of Energy, David Strickland, the head of NHTSA, Lisa Jackson, the head of the EPA, and then throw in a few governors and congressmen and senators and a mayor, and I couldn't believe how many people were.
But it still wasn't a political auto show.
No, they were interlopers this time.
Yeah, they were interlopers, and they fortunately were just kind of shuffled through, and thank you very much.
A PR guy that's been at one of the companies, I've known him for years, is there, and he says, you know, I want to meet with you. The problem is I'm sort of up to my elbows in regulators until 3 this afternoon. And I'm like, what?
Another car that I thought was kind of interesting was this Falcon F7. Now, before anybody thinks of the Ford Falcon, this is like, you know, this
mid-engine
two-seat rocket ship.
Built in Michigan.
Yep, the easiest cars in the world to build. You know, it's like when you're designing cars at school and you get the project that's the sports car. Okay, it's easy to do. It's hard to mess up that. And it's hard to mess one of these cars up, but it's also really hard to make them work like real cars when you're a low-volume manufacturer. But, you know, it's
what
striking.
What I liked is, again, it was something else. I come around the bend, and it's like, what the hell is this?
Yep.
And, again, to what
surprises.
We said earlier.
Surprises are good at auto shows.
Yeah, exactly right.
Because the truth is we get so jaded anyway, we're expecting everything early. I mean, they start showing us stuff in some cases in November before the show. We're going to have this here, we're going to have this here. It's like, great, okay.
Yeah, they have the early debrief of what we're going to show. And, yeah, I'd really love to see the car companies just do away with it.
Yep.
Just say, I guess you just have to see. But no, you'll just have to wait and see. That would be great.
And you know what? No car, if it's from a major manufacturer, will become ignored. It won't be ignored.
No.
It won't.
Cappy.
Okay.
Okay, let's go back to the Fusion, because Peter loved it. I thought it was pretty good, but you've got some issues with it.
It's not that I don't love it, but it's a very good car. It's a very, very good design. It's just that I think I was expecting more because of all the hype.
That's not what he told me at the show.
Well, we'll get into that in a minute. No, I think I was actually expecting more because of the hype, because it was like, it's radical, it's a big change, blah, blah, blah. Right now, there's one radical midsize car. And it still is the Sonata. Whether you like it or not, that's the radical design statement of midsize cars with a pre-caved-in grille and all that stuff. But it's,
so you don't think the Fusion's radical enough?
No, I'm not saying that. But it's not as radical as they were making it sound.
Okay.
Now, part of it is it was replacing, in some ways, from the B-pillar back, the Fusion is one of the most conservative midsize cars out there, the current Fusion. I mean, it's pretty... You know, you could use it in an insurance company commercial without doing anything other than just taking the badge off, and people wouldn't know that it was Ford. The front end, they did a good job on. It's a nice driving car. I have no doubt it's going to be a nice driving car. They were smart enough not to put a dry dual-clutch transmission in it, okay?
Oh, it's a wet clutch? Because that's what I was asking somebody today. Right.
They're doing also a conventional automatic as well.
Really? Interesting. Interesting. See, I thought it was a calibration problem, but I ran into some transmission guys at the show.
Physics.
Yeah. That's what one executive at a transmission company told me, is that Ford is trying to defy science with
the
dry
thing
clutch.
Is, I understand the advantage to dry clutches in theory, because when you've got a wet clutch, you're moving the clutches in liquid, and there's a loss. It's actually the equivalent of a pumping loss. You've got to move the stuff out of the way. I understand that. But the problem is the baseline that Americans are used to is a planetary gear set, torque-converted automatic that is best described as ooze-o-matic launch, seamless launching. The best dual clutch on Earth with a liquid dual clutch still can't do that.
Yeah.
You know?
I still think when the Fusion hits the market, the Sonata will look tired, and that'll be
I'm not saying that, but the Sonata is still the radical design. One of the reasons it's going to look tired is because it's radical. The Sonata is so far out there that everybody loves it.
I don't think it's that far out there.
The surfacing?
The surfacing, it's all very good. I like it.
I'm not saying it's, but it's for a mid-sized car, it's a pretty bold statement.
Yeah.
It's a serious diagonal on it. By comparison, the Ford looks absolutely conservative. You know, and the other problem is that the MKZ is the Ford design story to me. That thing is spectacular.
Yeah, that thing is spectacular. You know, I can't tell you how many emails I got. Well, the Lincoln doesn't look that good to me. And it's just like, please.
Wait till you see it on the street.
Oh, my gosh.
That's what I said. Yeah. You know, don't judge it under the harsh lights on a static display at an auto show. Wait till it's going down the road
and you know,
light.
It's like the MKT and the Flex. It's different upper sheet metal pretty much entirely, which is good. So it's not the previous MKZ that was basically, you know, the front and rear 4 feet of the car were Lincoln.
Plus
and,
the interiors.
Well, the interior is spectacular.
Spectacular.
Yeah. And I think that's the problem, that when I see that car, and then they talk by comparison about the Fusion. To me, the Fusion is just like, I'm sorry. No.
My only criticism of the Fusion, and I got to tell you, I love it. I think it's a great car. I think it's going to do great for them, is they did rip off Aston Martin. I mean, it is a very Aston Martin-like nose. But the other thing is the rear three-quarter of the car, the side three-quarter.
Three-quarter
rear quarter.
Yeah, but
not three-quarter, rear quarter.
Okay.
Rear quarter. Very busy. There's some lines there that I'm not sure why they tried to resolve it the way they did.
Part of it was they had to set up the taillight graphic. That's part of it. They had to set it up, and that called for two of those things I think you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, as far as it looking like an Aston Martin, I don't think it does, because Astons have fluted grills, but it's a subjective call. The thing is, Bill Mitchell said it better than anybody else. When Ford has the damned, those awful Granadas, the first generation Granadas, and somebody said, well, you know, Fords look like Mercedes-Benz, and your cars don't, and Mitchell says, if you're going to steal, the object is to rob a bank, not a liquor store.
Yeah.
Which told you what he thought of Mercedes, and better than anything else.
Right.
And I still contend that there's nothing wrong with someone looking at your affordable car and thinking of an expensive car.
True. No, I agree.
You know,
I agree. Look, we're nitpicking,
55
right?
55 Chevy.
Like I said, right.
Because a lot of people hated it because it had a Ferrari grill on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll tell you, but let me just say, when that first Fusion was unloaded off the truck in Omaha, it's a pretty big deal.
You know why it may not? It'll have 16-inch wheels, plastic wheel covers. See, they didn't have one car there with a real base wheel tire package. And what's interesting is, if you looked at all the Malibus we've seen, have been Ecos.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, every Malibu we see driving around here, because you see a bunch of CTF cars, captive test fleet cars. Conversely, they had an LTZ on the stand. The LTZ's got 19-inch wheels that change. I mean, it gives the car a lot more presence. We're seeing all LTZs on the stand there.
Yeah, but guess what? I mean, you had to really look at the GM exhibit to find stuff.
Oh, I know. I'm not talking about the exhibit.
Yeah, no,
I'm talking
about
the fact that Ford is showing cars that are titaniums that are going to be priced in what used to be the Lincoln range, and they'll probably sell. Dealer principals will get them for their wives, and there'll be some executives that get them, but it's going to be a low take rate car.
We'll see.
Okay.
Because the market is not asking for a Ford midsize car for $35,000. I don't think that you can find any place where the market's saying, I want to spend $35,000.
Yeah, no, nobody does. Mm-hmm. That's not where the market is.
I've got a LaCrosse out there that stickers for $36,000. It's just like.
It's a Buick, though. I mean, it's not a Ford.
Right.
There's a difference in perception of the brands. I'm not saying that it's a better or worse car, but there's a difference of perceptions of the brands.
Okay, well, as long as we're on that line, Buick Encore, their little baby version of the Enclave.
It's not really a version of the Enclave.
Well, I know it's not.
That's its problem. Because we were shown that car in a dome show. Remember, it had to be like 6 or 8 months before they went on. They went bankrupt. Remember, mm-hmm. They had a big design show, right. And you went to the studios.
But it didn't look as good as what they showed this year.
You just said to me? He's the healthiest man in intensive care, because it looked like the glamorous potato without the glamour. When we saw it, it was just. And I had a friend ask me, say, well, what do you think of the production car after I got out of it? And I said, nice interior. And he goes, yeah, what do you think of the car? Nice interior. Yeah. I'm sorry. The outside of it is trying to force design cues on a car that size and proportion don't carry it. And when I see that car, what I see is a car that would play really well in Korea or China.
Ooh.
I don't mean in a bad way.
Yeah.
We're getting it. Mm-hmm. But in a way, that's no different than, let's say, for the sake of argument, Scion selling an IQ in this country. That car doesn't really fit in this country.
It doesn't have the presence the new Escape has.
No, the Encore, no, it doesn't.
You know, that's a good comparison.
I saw new Captive Escape. Fleet Escape the other day.
You spot him.
And I'm telling you, that car is going to be hot.
It's going to pop. Yeah, no question about it.
That vehicle's going to be hot.
But you see, the thing that concerns me about the Escape is size, because the segment Centroid now has moved to the Equinox. And the Equinox, from a package standpoint, is appreciably bigger than... I mean, it is. And it's that whole thing about when people are buying a utility that size, are they gonna pip the fact that it's got more room or fill in the blank? The problem is the last Escape, while it had the look of an appliance, was a spectacularly good package. It really was. And it's why they were able...
It's been selling like crazy.
Exactly. That's why they were able to sell it for as long as they did.
They've been piling on incentives at the end of the year. But they will sell the Escape, believe me, on the name a lot,
right.
Just like the Explorer. I mean, people have grown accustomed to names.
Yeah. Did and Escape Encore, on... I mean, I remember Encore. I just wondered why they didn't call it Alliance.
The Alliance. Remember the Renault Alliance?
The Renault Encore.
Right. Yeah.
Take a Renault Alliance, turn it into a bubble-back hatchback, and you have an Encore.
That's right. That's right.
You know, I suppose the performance model they'll call GTA.
Okay, Chrysler exhibit had the Dodge Dart. What do you guys make of the Dodge Dart?
Go, Peter.
You know, I just said they're present and accounted for in the segment.
Which they haven't been for one generation
Reed
of product.
Reed Bigman got up there, and I thought for a moment I was at a muscle show, because he was preening and doing his bodybuilding stances, and I was just like, what the hell? But anyway, and there's a lot of noise, and they bring the car out, and it's just like... Okay, they're representing the segment. I wasn't wowed by it. And all the little Chryslerites out there, you know, did another voodoo doll of me and hung me in effigy somewhere. But I don't care. They're represented in the segment. Didn't blow my mind.
I think the design in the car is actually, it's very good, and it's surfaced unlike anything out of Chrysler in a long time. The surfacing on it is absolutely A1. They've got little tiny tweaks on the car that other manufacturers wouldn't have done, and they probably wouldn't have done, but somebody thought about it. It's like the DLO, they kick it up a little bit at the end. Mm-hmm. Normally, you'd take this line, and it would extend the window line if you ran it straight forward instead of notching it, but they do it. It makes the front quarter more interesting. I think it's going to do a lot better. The car, I think, on paper, has everything they need. They offer for economy a dual clutch, but they also have smooth shifting automatics that Americans seem to like. They've got manuals. The powertrain's interesting that they're using the 1.4, the high output 1.4 for the economy model. It's going to be interesting to see how it drives.
So what did you think?
I thought it was pretty good. I mean, it's I pretty much agree with you, Peter. You know, they got the box checked for having a competitive subcompact car. I was
compact, isn't it? Isn't that compact?
Or compact car.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean,
no. You're right. No.
Anyway,
I'm pretty sure you're right. No, compact car. You're right. Craig Cole, you know, on our staff here, did something interesting. He superimposed an Alfa Giulietta side view on top of the Dodge, because I thought they were identical. You know, the Chrysler people had said, oh, it's longer and it's wider, the Dodge Dart is.
It's got a deck lid.
But it is significantly longer.
Yes.
Slightly different wheelbase, yes. Not by much, maybe an inch or so.
It's about an inch.
But the Dart has got to be at least a foot longer than the Giulietta.
The Giulietta is basically a crop-back hatchback, doesn't have a trunk.
Right.
The interesting thing about, and this is all the nuances of these media conferences that the people out there don't understand, or that they're not there, so they don't know. Chrysler has made this transition now to everything they touch is gold. And I thought that the Dart presentation was definitely coming from that position. I mean, we're good, we're hot, we're this, we're that, and here's the latest in our brilliance. And it was just like, okay, it's a nice car.
Well, the point with the Dart is that I think I like it more than you two guys, but the issue with the Dart now is that part's done. That's cooked. The car's cooked. We know what it looks like. Whether it's great or not is subjective, but now they got to build them well.
I'm not convinced their dealer body can sell that car.
It's going to do better than the Dodge Caliber.
Well, yeah. I fearlessly predict they'll sell 5,000 more than they sold Calibers, you know? But the point is now they have the hardest thing they have to do, because now it's marketing. They've got to make sure that, one, you know they have a car in the segment. Two, that it's a noteworthy car in a lot of ways. I mean, the truth is, put a Dart next to a Corolla. I'm talking about from a product attribute standpoint. And the Corolla is bulletproof, but the Corolla is also just as dull as a bag of hair. And that's an issue that the DART probably isn't going to be dull, I suspect. You know, they're starting with good DNA by using the Giulietta. That's a pretty nice car from a ride and handling standpoint. So I'm assuming they wouldn't let that get too screwed up, but now they have to build them well. They have to have engineered it in a way that it's easy to build well, because as you know, that is really where a lot of the problems are. They have to have materials in it that will not have that problem that after a year, like a Caliber interior after a year was like most other cars after about 6 years. And then now they've got to do the hardest part. They have to market it, sell it. They have to support it. They have to make sure when they build it with rear brake caliper pads in there. You know, I mean, right. That is just a whole other issue. How do you build a car without brake pads and nobody notices it until it gets to the customer?
That's astonishing. Yeah. That's right.
And how about finally, in the last 36 hours, the multiple mea culpas that the great Sergio has thrown out at the Automotive World Congress. I was incredibly naive about the Fiat sales numbers. Hallelujah, Sergio. I mean, I've been writing this for months, and I've been crucified. But he's dealing around those. He's got an axe to grind. No, I got an axe to grind when it's stupid. And he was stupid and relentlessly so. His ego got out of hand. And he's still saying, well, we're going to sell, what, 6 million Chryslers in 2014?
Well, combined, Fiat Chrysler.
Fiat Chrysler. And even finally the analyst said, well, time out, Sergio. You need to just sit down and not talk for a while. Okay, so finally he admitted, yeah, I screwed up Fiat.
But the thing with Fiat was one of those things, there were aspects of it you could see coming. They launched the Mini for almost 11 months before the Mini went on sale. They were doing an aggressive guerrilla marketing campaign on a national basis. They actually were. It was serious. One. Two, they launched the Mini in an economy that was just booming and expanding. And here we are with the 500. The only pre-marketing they did was that Ciao Cinquecento USA site.
I said this a while ago. They did not establish a reason for Fiat's existence in the U.S. They didn't bother doing that. They just thought everyone would think Vespas and sweaters tied around their necks and nice Italian sunglasses, and they're going to buy a 500. It doesn't work that way. It just doesn't work that way. And Sergio admitted, oh, I picked that number because it was a couple thousand more than Mini. I mean, how can you run a car company like
but
that?
The point is, how could you pick that when you're launching in a bad economy? And not only that, it's, you know, if this is a car where you're selling to people who are price sensitive to a degree. So you're selling a car at the bottom third of the market in a bad economy. Common sense tells you it's going to be tough to duplicate what a company that was established in an exploding economy was able to do.
Well, also he said, I'm insisting on exclusive dealers, insisting on brick and mortar, insisting on dealers spending real hard cash. And I heard from a very top dealer in California, Chrysler Dodge Jeep dealer, and he said, yeah, we all know Sergio blew it. All he had to do is take the top 10 Chrysler performing dealers in the country and allow us to sell Fiat, and he might have gotten halfway to his number. He said halfway. But no, we got to have a separate dealer network for a car that, you know, it's okay. It's cute. It's a niche car. It was the car of the summer. It's over with now.
It's funny because the idea was they would actually use those for the Alfa dealership
as
well.
I get that.
And what's
that.
Interesting is apparently it looks like Alfa is on hold until they do the transition to rear-wheel drive platforms for Alfas.
Oh, no, Sergio said, end of 2012, guys. You spend money on that brick and mortar and you'll be swimming in Alfa product. It's not going to be till 2014 now. If I'm some of those dealers, I'm just like, you know, this isn't good.
It's going to be tough to hold on. No question about it.
Here's the question, though. What other vehicles should go in an Alfa show or a Fiat showroom? You know, I can understand selling the Doblo there, mm-hmm. the little minivan. I can understand that. Mm-hmm. But the car they should be selling out of that dealership is a car Fiat doesn't build at all anymore. The Barchetta, a small, affordable convertible. Mm-hmm. The Barchetta's gone. They don't even do it for the rest of the world, but that's a car they should be selling. And then you have these character-filled, sort of serious Italian passion vehicles you could be selling there. And that could work as a bridge if they had the right three or four cars from a dealer standpoint to keep the volume there until they get Alphas. But right now, that car isn't even in the pipeline.
Well, like I say, there's no reason for being for Fiat in this country. And that, by the way, that guerrilla campaign for Mini was genius.
I know.
And it was a once-in-a-lifetime ad opportunity that was executed to the nth degree.
Yeah.
None of that happened with Fiat because also...
Covered weekly world news.
Also,
by Mini.
Sergio, in his wisdom, decided we're not going to give any money for the launch, you know. So they just blew it. So I'm glad he's finally admitted it. Hello, Chip.
We're getting ready for
a bunch of stuff there.
We've got a very special announcement to make coming up after our next break. And Ben, why don't we take that break right now?
The Chevrolet Cruze is the car that is taking the world by storm. And a key reason is all the equipment that it offers. A driver information center, a USB port, ambient LED backlighting on the dashboard, remote start with a MyLink app, two accessory power outlets, one in front and one in the back for the rear passengers, OnStar, turn-by-turn directions, free for the first 6 months. Whew, there's just too much to list here. And you can check it all out at Chevrolet.com/cruise.
Okay, before we get into rapid fire here, we just wanted to give a shout out because apparently a show or two ago, somebody mentioned that you can't get good pastrami here in Detroit. And so a box showed up from Katz's Deli.
In Manhattan.
In Manhattan, New York City. And it's like a care package. What do we got there, Peter?
Well, we have hard salami.
From Katz's themselves.
From Katz's, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's their own salami.
We have this unbelievable rye bread.
Oh, yeah.
Gigantic loaf.
We've got special pickles.
Corned beef.
Pastrami. That there be pastrami. Look at that.
Yeah.
Nice little pickling.
You'd
shit.
Like a fork, Jim?
Yeah, I would, actually. Oh, yeah.
And we've got these potato things.
So the folks at Katz's sent us a nice little note that says, "Dear John, Peter, and the rest of the Autoline crew, we love your show and listen to it regularly. Enjoy these treats from our restaurant. Robert, Kathy, Fred, Kevin, Alan, and Jake." Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. That was
Ike the dog is sniffing this out intensely, but he's not going to get any of it.
Very nice.
Boy,
yeah.
Howdy.
It's really cool.
Is it good?
Got to try that. That's pretty darn good pastrami. Yeah.
Okay, now it's time for
rapid fire.
Okay, Cloud Todd Blasa.
I know Claude Todd Blasa.
Oh, Claude Todd Blasa, yes. Says, you said the 58 Lincoln and Mercury were the last Fords with push-button shifting. You meant Mercury Edsel, though Fomoco would prefer you didn't mention Henry's son. The only Ford Fusion transmissions, at least for the IC cars, our six-speed manual with a 1.6-liter EcoBoost and six-speed automatic.
Yeah, planetary clutch or planetary torque-converted automatics, the way God intends automatic transmissions to be.
Okay, Prehistoric says, in Sergio's press conference, he heaped praise on the upcoming Jeep Liberty replacement, saying it will be his best accomplishment. Any details about the new Liberty?
It's based off a front-drive platform, but it has been Jeepized. Quite literally. The Jeep criteria that they need for Jeeps, they decided they were going to go ahead and do.
First of all, Sergio needs to stop talking about his next best accomplishment.
And also, he kind of hinted that the Liberty could be built in China because they are looking at building a Jeep in China. He said it would never be the Wrangler.
No.
But he kind of hinted that the Liberty could be it.
It would make sense because they can also do a PF derivative for China. The PF is the Neon. They can do a Chrysler PF derivative if they wanted to, PG, if such a vehicle existed. And the platform commonality with that and the Liberty, theoretically, there's a lot of commonality in the way they build. So they could build them in the same plant, methinks.
Okay. DC Auto Geek says, any thoughts where the Taurus goes?
Well,
Taurus just stays where it is, right?
They're going to have to get to a more efficient package because, as you know, they have this very tall car that they lowered the roof on to make it swoopy. So they have this very tall car with a bad rear seat. They're going to have to fix the package on that car in the next generation. They can't redress it one more time because, let's face it, we're getting a 500. The Tauruses are 500 with a heavy reskin and some good mechanical work to it, but they got to do more work on it.
Greg says, I'm one of those people who sent you a note questioning the pre-show superlatives about the MKZ and Fusion, who were less than blown away when we saw the pictures. Nice-looking cars, yes. Blowing the competition out of the water, no. Since there seemingly are a bunch of us who feel the same way, I am moved to ask, how can you explain the rather extreme difference in viewpoints?
What's your question?
Well, you know, I'll answer it. This is why my mother always said, that's why they make vanilla and chocolate ice cream.
I mean, I agree with them that the more mundane of the car is the mundano. I'm sorry, the Freudian slip, the Fusion. But I think the MKZ, I mean, you look at who its competitors are. MKZ, really, possibly ATS at the ragged edge, but Audi A4 and Lexus ES.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, hey, we got a number of phone calls. Ben, let's bring in the first one.
Hey, guys, it's Jonathan out in old Japan. Listen, I just wanted to touch base, ask you what your opinion is of the 2013 60th anniversary Corvette that was released with a 427, 505 horsepower motor, fiber, you know, carbon fiber, this and that, the black headlights, got a power to weight ratio of 6.64 to 1, should do 0 to 60 in 3.8, 11.8 and a quarter. Is this an indication that General Motors is on target to deliver a C7 Corvette that really blows the mind of all sports car enthusiasts and Corvette enthusiasts? Again, I'm loving it. I'm digging it. They should have released it at the show yesterday or the day before.
The 60th anniversary.
Good to know it's out there. It's coming. And it's really the first time that General Motors didn't do like a decal package for the anniversary edition. And as a Corvette enthusiast, I'm very excited about it. God bless America.
Well, in a way, it is a decal package because what it is a Z06.
Well, it's the first time they've offered a convertible with all the good stuff.
Right.
And that's significant.
Yeah.
And they did a nice job on it. And they also announced that the 2013 Corvette is the last of the C6s. And, you know, I grew up with riding in fast roadsters, Corvettes, and Cobras and stuff. So if... You know, that's a pretty attractive package with the Z06. It's basically a Z06.
It's a Z06 convertible, yeah. Yeah, so in a way, what I'm saying is, in a way, it is a decal package in that they took stuff they had in the system and just sort of regened it.
But the anniversary is over and above that.
Right, I know, because it has more. Well, it's a Z06 with the carbon package, plus it's a convertible.
Right.
Yeah. But again, that's the great thing about the Corvette. They have this toolbox, this box of components that they can cook. The fact that they were able to pull the Grand Sport out by saying, well, we'll take this stuff from the Z06, we'll do it with an automatic, we'll do it with this engine.
Yeah.
That's the strength of the Corvette.
I don't know what to say to Jonathan about what that indicates for the C7 because, you know,
The thing is they'll be back to square one with the C7 because they'll have a new parts box. And they'll have to get some time to do all the variants.
Right.
Mike DeWhite says, why do push-button transmissions? Is there any ergonomic benefit? No.
No. There's no ergonomic benefit for an automatic. The benefit is that you clear up space on the console, right. and room on the center stacks and the consoles of cars is at a premium. That's why we had the rather astonishing BMW 7 Series with the steering column shifter, the old column shifter on the last generation. And it's why Audi, BMW, and now Chrysler have moved to an electronic shifter where you don't move it as far as you would normally track a regular shifter.
But think about it. You don't even need a lever if it's all electronic anyway.
Exactly.
In fact, I got to believe, just as everything's going push-button ignition switch, that soon everything's going to go push-button transmission.
Not manuals.
No, not them.
Okay, can you imagine? Clunk, put the clutch in and shift.
J.D. Clough says, that Chrysler 700C looks like a PT Cruiser from the back. Yeah, I guess sort of.
I mean, yes, it has taillights and a rear.
Scott in Cleveland, for Jim Hall, is GM serious about the Code 130R, or is it just a concept that will be forgotten?
Well, as soon as all the touchy-feely hordes get done at telling GM what that car will be, then they might know that.
I suspect we're going to see them build that car, but not with the 1.4-liter engine they talked about. It may have that as the base engine turbo, but the performance engine will be less than 270 horsepower, 2-liter turbo. No V6s. And my guess is they're going to do it so they can raise the price ladder slightly on the next-generation Camaro to around 26, 27 instead of 24. And plug this thing in at 20 to 24.
Me thinks Jim has some inside info.
No inside info.
Comment from Dr. Botox. He says, what's your guess for the 2012 sales in North America for the Fiat 500 Abarth? He says, I'll say 7,000 units. Boy, that's optimistic, I think.
Yeah,
I don't think it'll do 7,000.
You got to understand that you're talking about a hardcore group of enthusiasts that get up in the middle of the night and go downstairs or whatever they do to get on the internet and say, that's what I want. That's maybe 2,500 people.
Plus, the abarts are all, they're all manuals, aren't they?
Yeah.
And you see, that was one of the things. When they decided to add, because the abart is not a John Cooper Works compared to a Mini. It's a Cooper S, 160 horsepower, you know. So, I mean, it's the up-level version. But when Mini decided to throw an automatic behind the Cooper S, that's really where they got some legs to it. Manuals only, even in that segment, are a little bit of the pie. So you look at, you know, total people that want a 500, then how many want a manual and how many want to spend the money, and you've cut that pie relatively thin. 7,000 is actually probably more than two times as much as where the natural market is for the vehicle. Single body style, too. That's the other thing.
Right. Okay, we've got another phone call here. Ben, let's bring it in.
Yes, this is Atlas King from Geneva. I talked to Jim once, and he went on and on about how good wet clutch dual shifts are and dual clutches are and how bad the dry ones are. But the transmission that he seems to like in the Dart, isn't that a dry clutch? I'd just like him to clarify that for me. Thank you.
Sure thing. Thanks for the question.
It's not true. The transmission like in the Dart is actually the manual. That's the one I like.
That is a dry clutch.
Yes, it is. It is a dry clutch, but there is but one clutch. Yeah. And I also think that the 6-speed is probably going to be pretty good in it because that's a candidate that's going to be getting the 8/9-speed transmission. The Dart is one of the candidate cars for it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the second, you know, because there's a race for gears and transmissions, and Chrysler's there. Chrysler may have the first 9-speed out of the domestics.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also, you know, they got.
But is the Dart a dry or wet clutch?
The dual clutch is a dry clutch. It is. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because that's only available with the Eco model, the 1.4 turbo, which they're doing for the 40-plus mile per gallon.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing it as an efficiency transmission. And you can get it with a manual, but you can't get it with an automatic. So the price of the efficiency car is a mechanical launch, let's say.
Okay, Mitch W. says, do PR people at the car companies pay attention to comments on internet sites?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, they do. In fact, they have people whose job it is just to go through all that stuff.
And beyond PR people, marketing people, too.
Yeah,
yeah,
right.
They have hordes of entry-level people who do that all day.
Yep, so there you go, Mitch W. Chris in Baltimore says, I noticed there wasn't an MKZ badge on the concept. Given the heat Lincoln has gotten for the alphabet soup names, does anyone think there may be a name change before the production model is introduced?
I'd be surprised.
No, it's not going to happen.
No, they're living with this. And you know, the one thing they didn't do, they didn't turn the name of the Navigator one time, I guess, was the MKN. For about 80 seconds, they said, bad idea. But it is interesting that Cadillac went to alphanumerics, or just new alphas. Lincoln went to them except for their utility vehicles, and their utility vehicles kept their names.
Yeah. Well, I believe that at some point in the future, they will go back to names.
Of course they will. Yeah. I mean, and Cadillac will, too. At some time in the future, they're going to start naming Cadillacs again. And well, somebody will say, hey, we got this idea, a car called an Eldorado.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem right without an Eldorado or a Continental or a Fleetwood or something. You know, it just doesn't.
But the thing is, I agree with Eldorado, but Continental got slapped on everything there for a while where they really depreciated the value.
Well, yeah, but it would be way long enough.
Right, exactly. But it needs to go on the right car. It really does need to go on the right car.
Right.
Okay, we got another phoner. Ben, bring it in.
Hey, A-team's on staff tonight. Hey, guys, this is Youngblood from Cleveland, Ohio. I just wanted to call and wish you guys a happy new year. And when you were giving out the presents or the lumps of coal last year, as a all-time or long-time viewer of your show, I'd like to give you guys a present for the job you do, especially, you know, the A-team that's there now, how you, like Peter when he did his captain, that was fantastic. And Bob, Jim Hall, when he was playing around with his brother, Bob, that was great. I mean, it's amazing that you guys can have fun while you do such a fantastic job. So I give you guys a present. I don't know what that might amount to. Might amount to free happy hour on my tab along with lap dances. Yeah, why not? That sounds like a good time.
Boy, would I be in trouble with that.
I had a question. I go to the Detroit Auto Show every year, and there's always one show or one display that's in a corner someplace that doesn't get much attention, but it's fantastic. Every year I've made it a point to find that one display. It might be a manufacturer's engine technology or somebody out of the blue, but I mean, it's always there, and I make a point to find it. Did you guys find anything this year that you can direct me to that was fantastic and it's out of the normal? Again, Happy New Year, and you're doing a fantastic job. Keep it up. Talk to you later. Bye.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Youngblood. Well, I think Jim mentioned that futuristic Toyota. That's one thing.
But the display that's interesting, when you actually walk through it and look at it, is the Lincoln display.
Absolutely.
It really is. And they have these little things of items that are not necessarily, it's not like they're showing Fabergé eggs, but they're things that from a design standpoint have a premium nature to them. I mean, it really is an interesting display to walk around and look at the cars, too.
Right.
In a way, it's a display that was let down by the fact that they had things like the facelifted MKS, which it needed, but they only got half the facelift, right? They didn't do the rear, which it still needs. The MKT facelift has helped the car. It's almost like those cars were not worthy of the rest of the display, because the display is, it's a spectacular display.
Yeah.
It's really good. Austin from SC asks, what do you think of Toyota falling to fourth place in sales last year behind GM, VW, and Renault-Nissan? I didn't realize they had dropped to fourth. Is that right?
Capacity. It was capacity issue. They just got so kneecapped for some of their core product.
I mean, the earthquake and the tsunami. Yep. I mean, let's not.
That was a one-time deal.
But here's the other thing I keep saying is Volkswagen, man, they're the monster.
Oh, yeah.
GM may be selling more cars, but Volkswagen Group brings in more revenue and makes more profit.
Yep.
And isn't that what a corporation is supposed to be all about?
Well, that's the whole thing of this argument about market share and so on. No, what you want to do is have profits and profit for everything you sell. And you do that, that's how you stay in the business, and that's how you keep making good vehicles. That's
and right. By the way, I really like the Q3, and I really like the S5. RS5.
Yeah, the RS5 is one of those cars that fits in the category of I could take it or I could take it.
Yeah. We've got another phone call here, Ben. Let's bring it in.
Hi, this is Renzo Bandini from Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin. I was noticing in the coverage of the auto show that GM had a few two-door concepts, one based on the Chevy Cruze and another one, I believe, you said was similar to the BMW 1 Series. I was wondering if we've been reduced to two doors being simply show cars. Thank you.
Well, one of those cars is going into production, maybe both, but one for sure. I mean, we got two doors, but two doors are a different part of the market than they used to be.
Somebody must know something. That was a nickname I had in high school.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, well, exactly. I also figured out who Atlas King was, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that could be one of my buddies in Wisconsin, I suspect.
But two doors, there was a time they made a two-door sedan of everything. Mm-hmm. And it was quite literally a two-door version where the rear seat accommodation was exactly the same as the sedan. It was just harder to get into, and they cost less. That market's gone away, I mean, as far as two-door sedans. And coupes have devolved into vehicles with no rear seats. So this idea of an accommodating coupe was sort of resuscitated, really, by Scion with the first TC. Because that was a coupe that was a little bit more functional than the other coupes you could buy for the money then.
Yeah, what I find interesting is two doors just don't sell, not in big numbers like they used to. And yet every designer in the industry is trying to take their sedan and make it look as much like a two-door as they possibly can.
Well, they want it to look like a coupe because coupes are fashion, their style, and by their very nature, because they're fashion and style, they're always going to be low volume because they're less accommodating. I can perfectly understand that. And let's face it, some companies have done a good job. The Volkswagen CC...
That's
a good-looking car. And they had the facelifted car. We get an all-new Passat, but they did a facelift on the CC because they really couldn't mess with it a lot.
No.
And they did a good job on it.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's a coupe, but it just has four doors. That's the thing. We've got to get used to the concept of a four-door coupe now.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is an oxymoron in
traditionally,
my vocabulary.
But coupes originally, you have to understand, the phrase coupe, it was from the French word coupé, to cut. And originally it meant either lowered roof or shorter wheelbase, because the car was cut from its base form.
It may have originally, but, over a century, it evolved to be in a two-door.
Yeah.
Is a coupe or a coupe.
Yep.
Okay, we got another call. Let's bring it in, Ben.
John, my name is Dan Sutherland. I'm calling from Sault Ste. Marie in Ontario. My comment is simply that I have to strongly agree with John DiLorenzo on the new look of the Fusion. I think it's just stunningly a handsome car, and frankly, I think it's going to really shake things up. And I've read in a Ford press release that they're moving some of the production back to the Flat Rock, Michigan plant. Great news, great news. And as far as the Sonata goes, frankly, I think it's overstyled to the point of being somewhat gaudy. This new Fusion is absolutely a winner, and it's going to eat up a lot of Camry and Accord market share. That's my comment. Thank you. Goodbye.
Yeah, we appreciate the comment, and I think he makes a good point. You know, Camry and Accord, they're going to have a hard time fighting back to where they were.
Oh, yeah. And I think
if they can even get there.
I think it's going to be tougher for Accord because Accord, as you know, over the years, Accord used to be up there duking it out with Camry, and it got to the point where they were no longer doing that. And, you know, and the truth is, if the new Accord is any indication, I think they're going to have a tough time next year, or the next year they bring the car out.
Stephen Dargell, or Dargell, says, what would be a 40-mile-per-gallon combined unadjusted mileage in city highway MPGs? Oh, I know what he's getting at, because the Dodge Dart is actually officially classified as 40 miles per gallon combined.
Preliminary number, yeah.
Unadjusted.
Correct.
So unadjusted means... The EPA came out with a test, and over the years, they've been adding fudge factors.
Because the test is an irrelevant test.
Because the test really did not accurately reflect what you would get in the real world.
And you can't drive it anymore. The physical test, if you try to drive it, you're either going too fast at some times or too slow on others. Right. See, the drive is actually, and it was an L.A. loop, 73 miles, I think. The adjustment factors were to try to get the mileage more closer to real world.
Right. So that's why what they mean by adjusted
right. That is
number.
Using the original data. And you see, the interesting thing is the unadjusted data is the certification data.
Correct.
So, and the label data is for marketing.
Right,
so the car will get to the EPA for... CAFE, 41 combined.
Right.
But the label won't say 41 combined.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's very complicated, but I will give this to the EPA. That combined number is awfully accurate for the vast majority
Correct.
Of people.
Yes.
For the vast majority.
Yeah.
Unless you're living at high altitude or
with the new
big hills
with
every
the
day.
Adjustments that came in 3 years ago.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. It's getting
they're
very
pretty,
close.
They're pretty accurate. Okay, Ben, let's bring in the next phone call here.
Hi, my name is David Lopez. I'm calling from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. I love the show. And I just wanted to know, do you think Ford should market the C-Max as its own brand like the Prius is going with Toyota? Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
Well, good question. Yeah, should Ford market the C-Max as its own brand as Toyota's going to do with the Prius?
They're not advertising the Toyota as its own brand. That is such a misnomer. The Prius is now a range of cars, just as Corolla was. Mm-hmm. But the commercials still talk about it being a Toyota. They're not saying Prius without saying Toyota. It's a model. And in that respect, the C-Max is the same. It's a model of a Ford. It's
right.
a C-Max. And they're not calling it a Focus C-Max.
Right.
It's a C-Max. But it's one... kind, it's one configuration of car. The C-Max is one body style that they have, you know, a plug-in and non-plug-in version. So it's really a powertrain variation on one car. Prius now has, or will soon have, three different vehicles in the range, which is back when Corolla had a sedan, a wagon, and a hatchback.
Right.
They're body styles. It's not a brand.
Do you think they'll take it to be a brand?
No, because the whole point of Toyota's smart enough to understand that you need to support Toyota, the major company, by selling these highly known models, but you still support Toyota with it. And you can see where they haven't had that luxury with Scion, in that Scion is a series of branded cars and not a strong Scion brand.
Good. Do we have any more, Ben? If we have another phone call, let's bring that in.
Yeah, John, this is Rick from San Diego. Hey, based on the recent survey on the turbo diesel cars showing they had a better percentage sales increase than hybrids. Of course, the hybrids did have the Japanese tragedy that affected the Prius sales. But do you think we've finally turned a corner and we're going to start seeing some diesel cars in the U.S. market? Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. No question about it. Chrysler, even though they had announced it sometime before, they reaffirmed at the Detroit show the Jeep Grand Cherokee is going to get a diesel.
There's going to be a diesel in the Cruze.
Right. Chevy Cruze.
Yep.
Right.
There are going to be more diesels, but as far as the total penetration of diesels, I don't think it's going to increase a lot. I think you're going to find people moving cars around that want diesels. Because this happened when...
I don't agree. I think that we're going to see more diesels. And when you look at the take rates on certain model lines in Audi... they're over 50%.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's far better than what
like in the
hybrid
A3,
models.
For example, right?
Well.
How many A3s they sell?
Well, not a whole lot. That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah, see, that's why when you see percentage increase, which is what he's talking about,
mm-hmm.
the fewer you have, You know, if I have five of anything and suddenly I get six,
yeah, it's a big increase.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
But if I had 8,000 and suddenly I see 9,000, I haven't had as big an increase.
Mm-hmm.
So the percent increase is a misnomer. You're going to see more diesel cars. There's no doubt about it. There's going to be more variation. But remember, when Mercedes, at one time, every Mercedes they sold was a diesel except the SL for a couple of years. It was not good because their diesels were okay, but they weren't that good. And when they started dropping Mercedes diesels, Volkswagen found out that a lot of buyers that were hardcore diesel buyers that bought Mercedes were buying Jetta diesels. That's, you know, would anybody else in the world have gone from a Mercedes, say, an E-Class sedan to a Jetta? No. These guys were chasing diesel engines. We've talked about this. The market pull for diesels is not there yet.
I don't agree. I think it's, when you say it's not there yet, we have to define what you mean by not there yet. I think that there's going to be growing demand for diesel engines. I think you're going to see more manufacturers bring it in. We mentioned the Jeep. We mentioned Chevrolet. Mazda's bringing diesel to the U.S.
market,
too. Yeah,
but stop there. Chevy's doing it with no demand for a diesel Cruze.
They're just testing the waters.
Exactly. But that's my point. And to think that the cars will create the market is only half the equation. You've got to have some harmonization of diesel fuel pricing compared to gasoline.
Well,
on a national basis, it ain't there,
help.
John. It's not
that
there.
That would help. But, you know, as
if
you know,
if you pay more for the fuel and the car is more expensive to get, and you look at the fuel economy they're getting with some gasoline-powered cars, the payoff for the cars from a cost standpoint ain't there. You've got to buy it for the attributes.
Well,
and there are people that do buy diesels for the attributes. They launch great because they got all that torque. Mid-range on a diesel, spectacular. I love modern diesels. But I also know that that's not enough to make some guy say, yeah, I'm going to pay another 40 cents a gallon for fuel and pay more for the car to begin with.
Well, as you know, you'll get about 30% better fuel economy, comparable performance to comparable performance. So as long as the price of diesel is not 30% greater than gasoline, you're coming out ahead. And you'll
get it. No, you're not. Price of the car is higher. You have to take that into consideration.
Well, but so is the residual. So you're going to get it when you sell the thing, too. Diesel, go check diesel cars, man. They're used diesel cars.
I know.
They're expensive.
They are, but it's not incremental. The actual percent residual is higher, but you got to do it on the numbers because you're not using percentages of dollars when you buy stuff. Using real money.
Well,
you have
to
do the calculation. When you do, you find the payoff for diesels is tough to find unless you have significantly closer priced fuels. It's just not there yet.
Okay. Best in show, Detroit.
Whoa.
One car,
best in show. Oh, boy.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Okay, you think about it. I'm going to go to a car we didn't talk a whole lot about, and that was the Lexus LFLC. To me, that was a best in show. In fact, it wasn't only my opinion. You know, there's about two dozen designers who walked the show and vote on the Eyes on Design Best Concept Award. They gave it to the LFLC. I found it significant because heretofore, Toyota has pretty much styled plain vanilla, dull, boring cars. And that's not the case with the LFLC. I know it's just a concept. It'll never get built. I don't think you could productionize a car like that. But this was also done at Kelty in California. This was Kevin Hunter's way of saying, you think we can't do design? Take a look at this. Take that. So I'm going to go out and say Lexus had the best car there from a concept standpoint from that for those reasons.
In that case, you're right. The LFLC is probably the most significant car there, and also the fact that it's a passionate design from Toyota, and they only do those once every two or three decades. And we've seen one.
This is the first decade they've done it.
Oh, no. Toyota 2000 GT.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
I mean,
okay,
they do it. They can do it.
Right, yeah.
And when they do it, they do it very well. But
that was four decades ago.
Yeah, but there's some stuff that happened in between.
Yeah. Some.
Hachiroku.
Okay, so you're going to choose what?
LFLC. I think of all the cars there. Now, the car that caught my attention and that was the most intriguing to me
was
the damned Model C Tesla that had the jump seat in the back of the hatchback. And the trunk in the front. You know, it's like no engine, no bay. And if you just look at it, you're like, whoa, that's pretty funky.
Yeah.
And a car that didn't get a lot of attention that actually is, to me, probably a really intriguing car is the Bentley Continental 8.
I love that car.
Uh-huh. You know, they've got a much lighter engine in it that still is making serious power. In Europe, it's much lower CO2. That, to me, is a pretty spiffy automobile.
Yeah.
Okay, let's put the auto extremist on the spot. Best car in show.
Best blue sky concept, Lexus. Best concept, MKZ.
MKZ to me is not a concept. That's a production car.
That is a production car, yeah.
And it's a great production
car. In fact, I think they pulled the door handles off it just so they could call it a concept so they could redo the car in New York.
And the glass roof.
And the glass roof.
And the glass roof, yeah.
Yeah. Okay,
and
guys.
I'll bet you when they show it in New York, it's got a badge in the back that says MKZ.
Oh, you think?
I bet it will.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
You would have to do that.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks to the Cats.
The Cats Deli guys came through.
Cats Deli guys. Yeah, what a cool package that is.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Robert Albender
is what Chip, our producer, is telling us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Robert.
Tasty, yummy.
Yeah. Okay, folks, so join us again here next week. We're going to have Carl Ludvigsen Skyping in from London.
Carl E. Ludvigsen.
Oh, Carl E. Okay, just so you don't confuse him with somebody.
No, his byline was always Carl E. Ludvigsen.
Oh, okay.
He's a good egg.
Very interesting guy, yeah. He's a lot of fun.
I wonder if he still owns that Lancia Stratos.
Oh, he had a Stratos?
He had a yellow Stratos. Took me for a ride around Regent's Park in London with it. It was the highlight of that trip over there. I was like, whoa.
So remember, you can friend us at Facebook, you can follow us on Twitter, you can get all of Peter's stuff at AutoExtremist.com, follow him on Twitter too, and don't forget about our roundabout tomorrow night. I hope you liked our auto show coverage, it was pretty good, I thought, and don't forget, you can always subscribe for our newsletter for free, just check it out on our website at Autoline.tv. Anyway, over and out, folks, thanks much.
And if you like this Auto Extremist sweatshirt, you can go to AutoExtremist.com and check out our new Auto Extremist store.
I'm going to check that out.
That's a spiffy t-shirt, too. It's purple. Well, not the shirt, but...
Visit our website, Autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, get your daily automotive news fix with Autoline Daily, and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline Detroit. That's all there, and much more at Autoline.tv.
Autoline After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion. And by Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more.